There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanel, and I'm your host. On this week's program, Shortwave Radio in the Internet Age. I'll be speaking with Dan Roberts, who produces a weekly program called The Shortwave Report. And we'll be discussing why shortwave radio is still important in the 21st century, and how it can help us learn a little bit more about the world we live in. It's going to be a fun interview. Do stay tuned. Radio has seen a lot of changes in the last 10 years. Besides massive industry consolidation in the United States, in that time, we've heard internet broadcasting become a mature technology and seen the launch of major satellite radio providers. With access to radio programming from around the world via these new media, you'd think shortwave radio would have gone the way of 8-track tapes and beta VCRs. But shortwave lives on as a vital medium for international communication, where you can still find voices not easily found even on the internet. Dan Roberts is a bit of an evangelist for the value of shortwave radio and its ability to help us better understand the world around us by exposing listeners to news, ideas, and perspectives different from our own. He produces a weekly community radio program called The Shortwave Report, which he'll tell us more about.
Well, what I do is I listen to about 15 or 20 hours of international news each week in English and select out what I can fit in a half-hour show, about 22 minutes of stories that I listen to free speech radio news. I listen to some NPR as much as I can handle. And I also check out what, what's being covered in the national press, you know, ABC or CNN and news and things like that a little bit, just so I know what's, you know, the slant that's being put on things. And so as I'm recording, I have a way that I can make track marks and then be able to delete stories, because otherwise I'd end up having to sort through 20 hours at the end. And then try and find some themes that are pretty different from the general spin that's happening in American media. And then put together a package, you know, a half-hour show and post it up on a website. And then stations download it from there. Also, individuals can download the show from the website. And right now it's on around 60 stations around the world.
And what stations do you tune to internationally to time and again to bring onto the Shortwave Report?
Well, the core stations I use are Netherlands, Radio Havana, Cuba, China Radio International, The Voice of Russia, and Spanish National Radio. Part of that is the BBC doesn't give permission for rebroadcast. But also the BBC is so available that it didn't seem like it's... I mean, they have great reporters on most subjects. They're really a great organization. Radio Australia also didn't. They wanted me to get clearance on every story I was going to air. And so I said, that's way too complicated. And I used to do Germany a lot. And I noticed that the station that you're mainly associated with, WEFT, does a daily Deutsche Welle news, which is awesome. I mean, if you're going to have a daily international news show, Deutsche Welle seems like it's it's the best. And I used to do a lot of Radio Deutsche Welle, which stopped doing shortwave broadcasting about 2 or 3 years ago. It is available on the web, but I want to get stations that you can listen to on shortwave. So those are the main stations that I use. Netherlands is, it's pretty broad spectrum. It's very intelligent. They interview important people. They don't really throw much of a slant on it in the same way that the BBC is pretty clear about that. China Radio International, surprisingly enough, doesn't really throw that much of a slant on their stories either, and they have reporters around the world. When we get to Cuba, we definitely have some slant there. But it's an interesting slant, and I think it's valuable for people to hear what they present. And Russia, it goes both ways. Some of it's very slanted, and some of it, there's a real self-praising quality to some of what Voice of Russia does. But they also cover things that just sort of get left out of the news, and American news. And I guess one of my main motivations was that I think the news is really important. And I think that especially, I mean, it's gotten worse in the last 6 years and probably worse in the last 15 years. And, you know, who knows when it actually, American media started getting so limited in scope, even though we have all these more channels and different talking heads on television and stuff like that. But radio, I think that there's this illusion that I used to have that American media was the most honest and noble and forthcoming, you know, that we're the world leaders, you know, we make the biggest cars, we make the, you know, the best radio, the best television. And in the early 70s, I lived for a little while in Ohio and came to realize, to find out about shortwave radio, because some of the people that we lived with had a shortwave radio and started talking about it. And I started thinking it was really curious to hear foreign perspectives on things. And so I got a shortwave radio and came back to Northern California, where I live, about 150 miles north of San Francisco, and realized I could get good shortwave reception up here, and just found that if I wanted to know what was going on in the world, I would definitely turn on the shortwave radio and listen to that.
So what sort of perspectives or stories are being left out in the U.S. mainstream media that you're finding coverage on some of these stations?
So, for example, last week, the 22nd of September, there was quite a few stories about whether the war on terror was actually a holy war, you know, if it's a battle of religions. And it's something that I don't really, I mean, it's not talked about in that sense very much on American media. And so Netherlands had a couple of stories about it. So I ran those stories. A press review of Bush's speech to the United Nations, you know, which was Dutch press. And then another story from Cuba on the United Nations Assembly, a viewpoint on that. And then a story that I didn't ever hear in the American media about how the United States is stockpiling the pesticide methyl bromide, which everybody else on the planet agreed to stop using a number of years ago because it destroys ozone, the ozone layer. And then reporting, for example, when Israel invaded Lebanon, the reporting in the United States media was so biased. And just to hear other stations reporting the events, you know, a lot of times it's just reportage of events is so different. So a lot of times what I'm covering is events just told from somebody who's standing outside the United States, looking at another part of the world and just saying, well, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. And if you compare it to something that, you know, I would wish that National Public Radio was a bit more objective, but they're incredibly embedded. And so that's part of the reason I do the show, is I just want to, you know, I hear it on the international reporting, a different story, the same place, same time, but the story is pretty different. And so I like to be able to put that out so that people will think about it. I mean, I started doing the show 9 years ago on the community radio station here in Mendocino County. And I had been listening to shortwave since, like I said, the early 70s. And I would especially listen to it when there was international turmoil, say the Latin American, the wars in the 80s in Latin America. And to listen to how it was being reported in the rest of the world compared to what we were hearing in American media was just so different. You know, I tell people and say, hey, you know what, I heard this, and this. And then when the first Gulf War broke out, there was a huge difference in the reporting. I mean, just phenomenal difference. And so I started telling people about that. And then eventually somebody else was doing another show, kind of a media analysis show on KZYX, the station I'm associated with here in Mendocino County. And so they'd have me on each week to give a 5-minute summary of stories I heard that were really different. And then eventually, you know, I said, well, maybe I should just do this as a weekly show. Actually, it was every other week at that point. So I'd do a half-hour show of how different the stories were. And within a few months, I realized, well, wait a minute, I'm telling the story after I've heard it, you know, how that changes everything. So I thought, well, I got to find a way to record these other stories and play it back, because the way the story is told has a lot to do with the impression that you get, you know. And so I started doing that, and after another year, I really upgraded my equipment, so I had a much better shortwave radio and a better recording system. And then about, I guess it was 2000 or 2001, Free Speech Radio News was formed because people broke off from Pacifica because, like, I guess they got fired, right? Is that what happened? And they started doing Free Speech Radio News, which they were distributing by MP3s on the web. And they had done it for a month, and I had heard about it. You know, our station was rebroadcasting them, and all of a sudden I went, well, I can probably do that. And so I figured out how to do MP3s and started making the show into a, you know, an MP3 file, and then telling radio stations about it. And so it was slow at first, you know, 5 stations, 10 stations were rebroadcasting it. And then as time went on, people got more comfortable with the idea of downloading a radio show like your show is, you know, that it's really simple for a radio station now. I mean, 5 years ago, it seemed kind of complicated to them, but now it's very simple for them to figure out, well, I can just go up, download the show, and rebroadcast it. And at the same time, I went weekly, and sort of as an experiment that hasn't stopped, because it actually takes about 25 hours a week to produce the show. So it's interesting. I get really great response from people around the world, and people are really thankful to hear, you know, other perspectives on the news. So that's, I guess, why I keep doing it.
You're listening to an interview with Dan Roberts, producer of The Shortwave Report. And this is Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Bob Rees-Mandel, and I am your host. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. There you'll find the Media Geek blog, which has frequently updated news and views about grassroots and independent media and our media environment. Lots of stuff that we just don't have time for here on the program. If you have any comments about the program, do send them to me, please. Paul@MediaGeek.net. And now we return to this discussion about shortwave radio with Dan Roberts.
And someone might argue, though, that now in 2006, so much international news is ostensibly available on the internet. You can do a quick search on Google News and come up with hundreds of stories on a particular item from around the world. So why and how does this shortwave radio compilation fit into that?
Well, that's true. You can't get Spanish National Radio. You can't get Radio Havana, Cuba on the web. Two stations that I consider really important. So how does it fit in? I guess, okay, I live out in the woods. I live off the electrical grid. I live back in the mountains. And so I don't have PG&E or, you know, an electrical utility. I have solar panels and make my own electricity and stuff. And a shortwave radio is a very simple thing. The internet requires that, you know, you have a computer and you have a phone line and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I do have a computer, I do have a phone line. I mean, some people love shortwave radio just because, well, gosh, I'm listening to a station from, you know, Asia Beijing or Moscow, you know. So how it fits in, you know, the printed stuff, the websites and stuff like that on the web, it's a different medium. And it's really, I find it really different to hear a story, a radio story, and to read versus reading an article about the same thing. And the tone of voice and everything really influences the impression, like I said before, that you get from a story. So I think that that's why I think that, you know, I think shortwave is a valuable way of communicating. Now, Deutsche Welle, for example, doesn't think that anybody in North America uses shortwave, which is why they cut their transmitting to North America, but also because they really have a excellent internet distribution. They have a way of streaming on the web at a really low bit rate, so even on a dial-up modem, you can easily listen to Deutsche Welle. And maybe in a way that's what's going to happen, is that, you know, shortwave will sort of disappear. I don't think it's going to happen for a while. It's interesting, the reason that shortwave, the international stations broadcasting in English, got started was people talked about, after World War II especially, that, you know, maybe it would be good if people listened to each other's perspectives. And, you know, radio was the thing then. We have no internet in 1948. And so people started producing international broadcast with the idea that, you know, it's good for everybody to hear everybody else's thing. So it's, I guess what I'm saying is that that's where shortwave started from. Is it still relevant now? I guess so, because a lot of people really like the show, and they, most of them have access to the internet, and they can go to a zillion websites and read articles. And, you know, maybe in a few more years, more people will be comfortable with streaming audio on the web. I'm comfortable with that, but I know a lot of, I'm 58. I know a lot of people in my age group that are totally not comfortable with streaming audio on the computer. It seems like, oh, that's just, you know, that's the future. I'm not going to go that far. Maybe it'll seem simpler as time goes on, and maybe the internet will be the main way people can listen to international news. The BBC also really cut back its distribution or its transmitting of shortwave signals to North America. However, they transmit so strongly to the rest of the world that it's really easy to listen to the BBC anyway on shortwave.
But in a way, it's funny, because isn't listening to shortwave in some ways more difficult than listening on the internet? The schedules are different, and they sort of, it seems to maybe someone who's not used to it, catch as catch can, all these different frequencies, different times of day, esoteric equipment.
Yes. Well, I don't know if the shortwave radio is really esoteric equipment, but it seems that way to lots of people. And the fact that, you know, and then even if you know the frequency and the time, sometimes the ionospheric conditions are bad, and so you get terrible reception, you get no reception. So in that sense, it is, you know, more complicated. There's lots of on-demand international news available. And the way I'm distributing it is through using the internet anyway. So, you know, it isn't... I like the idea of shortwave radio, I guess, is kind of like an aspect of it. That I like the idea that I could be anywhere and turn on a shortwave radio, and I know how to find the station. So what to look for and which frequencies are going to be going at a certain time of day. So it's pretty easy for me, and maybe that is kind of esoteric, and most people would be going, well, that's why I give out times and frequencies. I mean, I've always said during my show, you know, that part of my purpose is to encourage people to listen to international broadcasts using a shortwave radio at home. But I also say, if you use the internet, streaming globally is also quite easy. And I have links up on my website so that you can go to all these different, you know, websites that, where you can stream. A lot of it's on demand, which is incredibly convenient. You know, if you want to listen at 6:37 to the headline news, you can go up and do it. So maybe in the future there isn't going to be, you know, assuming that the ball keeps rolling the way it is and the internet keeps going and all that kind of stuff, then maybe shortwave will become like 78 RPM records or 8-tracks or something like that.
You know, but I'll sort of come back from my devil's advocate position. I have this wind-up radio, and it gets shortwave reception. And actually, I think it gets pretty good shortwave reception for what it is. And so when the power goes out or we have a thunderstorm here in central Illinois, I can still listen to the BBC or I can listen to Radio Havana.
Yeah. Will Radio Havana ever be on the internet? Maybe. It's something that they're not doing at this point. It seems like it wouldn't really be that expensive for them to do that, but they're not doing it. And Spanish National Radio doesn't seem to have an interest in doing it either. I like radio. I mean, you're doing radio, I'm doing radio. Radio is a medium that, even though there is some complexity, like you're saying, your wind-up radio, the strong stations, it's easy to get them. I know that, when the BBC decided to really cut back to shortwave transmissions, a lot of people say, well, this is the death of shortwave. However, anybody that, like you or I, that have a shortwave radio know that they're sending that signal all over the place anyway, so there isn't a signal that's aimed right at your area, but you can still pick it up well. So there's other things out there that you will never find, probably, on the internet.
So you've been doing this for 9 years, and that's, that 25 hours of listening a week. Would you be doing that even if you didn't have to make the program, or do you listen even more, and just 25 of it is the part that you try to record?
I'm listening to 15. I spend another 10 hours between the production part of it, but... No, I would listen really differently. See, what I do now is I listen intensely Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night, and then put the show together Wednesday night and Thursday. And I think I would kind of drop in and out a lot more if I wasn't doing the show. And so, in fact, I don't listen to much shortwave other than when I'm, I don't like pleasure listening to shortwave. I also produce other radio shows. So, it's like I produce a youth radio show called Youth Speaks Out that has a website, youthspeaksout.net, that I've been doing for 7 years. And then I produce a world music and poetry show that's not on the web. It's just on the local station. So how much radio is good for one person? I've actually thought about trying to do a show that was based on just internet, audio, putting together a half hour of the best internet audio. It would actually be more convenient for me in a way, but I know I've heard from many hundreds of people that got shortwave radios after hearing the shortwave report. And so if I heard from hundreds, then there's probably thousands. So people have that access. I mean, there's a part of me that's maybe it's a little paranoid, but thinking that, at some point in the future, we might really have to struggle to hear how other countries are thinking. And having a shortwave radio around is a good thing on that level, because the internet could be controlled in a way that the radio waves, it's much more complicated. You can jam a station, but that only works in a local area. You can't jam, if Cuba's sending out its signal and there's a story that some country doesn't want anybody that lives there to hear, they can jam it in a localized area. But, in something like the United States, you'd have to have jammers all over the country. Cuba's accused of doing a lot of jamming. Mainly what they're jamming is they're jamming the stuff we force feed through Radio Martí onto them, propaganda coming into them. China's got a bad reputation for jamming stuff as well. And the U.S. actually got a really bad reputation for jamming Netherlands back during the first Gulf War. And when they did it, then Netherlands did a story about it, and then they really jammed. But I don't think that they worry much about it anymore, just because, especially in America, people don't listen to it that much. But, we're both media geeks. Your show's called Media Geek, but we both are. And it's interesting to see, where we're going to be in 5 years. I appreciate programs like yours focusing on the concept of the media itself and what it's doing, like the thing you did about Oaxaca and the takeover of the stations there. And, just looking at the overall picture of what media is and how we use it and what is accessible to us and stuff. And the internet's become this really amazing, amazing source of stuff. So you do have to look for it. And there's so many things out there. And
well, Dan, how much longer do you plan to keep doing this show? How much longer are you willing to keep doing it?
Well, I think if I didn't get so much positive feedback, I'd probably quit a couple of years ago. But people keep telling me that they really appreciate it, and it keeps being on more radio stations. So I feel like I'm, you know, fulfilling something that people want. And so I feel like it's my social obligation. I used to think that I'd be able to make a living doing it. That was one of my fantasies in the early days. it certainly hasn't worked out to be that at all. But then that's kind of where community radio is. And I get emails and letters from people in Illinois, people in Indiana, people in Germany, people in Asia. And so I guess as long as I keep getting positive feedback and I can fit it into my schedule, I will do it, forever, I guess. I don't know. I have no intention of stopping at this point because it's, I feel like I'm accomplishing something, Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I still think it's my mission. One of my missions in life is to try and get people to listen to more international news and hear it from international sources, because I think that, I think that that would improve the global situation, which is, in a lot of other ways, really deteriorates. Maybe it'll be simpler in the future. I'll have some breakthrough and all of a sudden I realize, well, I don't have to spend this much time doing it. I'll just put something up, but who knows? I have no intention of resigning at this point.
Well, Dan, thank you for taking some time to speak with me, and keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
And that was Dan Roberts, producer of The Shortwave Report. You can find The Shortwave Report online at outfarpress.com. He also uploads it to Radio Indie Media, which is radio.indymedia, indymedia.org. It's also heard on 50 stations around the world. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm your host and producer, Paul Riesmandel, and I'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media, as well as our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, where you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views about our media. You can also download the program at radio.mediageek.net or subscribe to the podcast to have it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. That's all at mediageek.net. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Lowe. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some segments are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. And Media Geek is heard on 9 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Media Geek is free to air on your local community radio station, too. Just drop me a line at paul@mediageek.org. That email address is also good for any comments you want to send in about the program. Once again, that's paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.